Like, who in the league would you want to drop the gloves with the most?
Ooh, that's a good question. I like it.
Thank you.
There's a couple. I could probably name a whole roster. But probably Andrew Ladd or Blake Wheeler. That's probably who I'd like
your
to...
Your former teammate?
Yeah.
Well, maybe you'll get a chance this year now that you're in Buffalo, right?
That's probably your best answer you're going to get all day, too.
Vander Kane from earlier this year laying down the gauntlet ahead of tomorrow afternoon's contest between the Jets and the Sabres at MTS Center. Just a riveting interview he conducted with Barstool Sports.
If you haven't watched that
live,
I posted that earlier on Facebook. I don't know if I tweeted it out too, but if you really want to have 15 minutes of riveting entertainment, watch that with Sophie Julia and Evander Kane in his penthouse suite in Las Vegas, because man, you'll get insights into Evander Kane that you just never thought you could get.
It's a doozy of a 15 minutes. You probably will regret spending the 15 minutes watching it, but that was the money clip, the money shot from that interview, is him laying down the gauntlet saying he wants to fight Ladd and Wheeler most out of any NHL
players.
He
didn't say he wants to
fight
Buffalo there.
No, he didn't say Buffalo. Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see if either of them take him up on the challenge tomorrow afternoon between the Jets and the Sabres. You know, how difficult, we talked about composure, right before Claude Noel came on, and we really do appreciate him joining us. That was a fantastic interview and
really,
fantastic insight.
It really classy of him to come on.
Yo, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and to speak honestly, and we sure tremendously appreciate it. How difficult do you think it will be for the Jets to keep their composure? We know that Paul Maurice is going to be preaching that in the dressing room. But when push comes to shove and the crowd is chanting, "Where's your tracksuit?" which you're going to hear tomorrow. And you're going to hear Stafford's better probably tomorrow as well. How difficult is it going to be, do you think, for the Jets to keep their composure?
I mean, it'll probably be a little bit difficult, but I've always been of the opinion that the coach would rather have to bring you down a bit rather than bring you up. Absolutely. And so, and if it means a penalty or two, and again, obviously your penalty kill hasn't been good and they have a good power play, you're probably going to have and Paul Maurice usually has been pretty lenient about that anyways. You want to make sure they have all the energy. You don't want to bottle that up too much. So I think you let them go.
And you're right, Richie. Paul Maurice is going to be telling his team, and this is a situation where the Jets have to get the 2 points, right? And they really have to win 70% of their games for the second half of the season. But when the Jets are the most effective, it's when they are physical and they're finishing their checks, establishing a forecheck, taking time and space away from the opposing team, right? So Paul Maurice is going to want his team to play with that speed and physicality that really got the Jets into the playoffs last year. But he doesn't want it to come at the expense of penalties and kind of sideshow type of antics, right? He doesn't want players to get into fights just for the sake of getting into fights. He doesn't want players running around taking hits at Evander Kane, right? He wants to make sure that his team is focused on playing their game and getting the 2 points. And, to answer your question in another way, I think absolutely there is going to be some type of, focus on Evander Kane. And how could there not be? Because Evander Kane on the other side is going into a building that he played in for 3.5 years, and he's going to want to prove to the Jets fans that the Sabres won the trade. So he's going to want to score a goal. He's going to want to make a big hit, right? Mm-hmm. So I think it's going to be tough to completely take all of that passion and all of that kind of surrounding drama that's going on with this game. But I don't think necessarily that that's going to be something that's going to cause the Jets to lose this game and not get the 2 points.
We're now 11 months since the trade occurred. We asked Bill Hoppe about it, if there was a winner and a loser. And Bill, earlier in the program, covers the Sabres. He said the Jets were the winner of the trade. Would you agree with that sentiment right now? I mean, looking at as things currently stand 11 months later, were the Jets the clear-cut victors in that deal?
Yeah, I think when you look at it, I thought overall when the Jets made the deal that they got out ahead, but not as maybe as far ahead as Winnipeg fans thought, just because of they'd grown tired of Kane for sure, and maybe a little bit of Bogosian, but not to that extent. Mm-hmm. Maybe on ice more than off ice. Although I think they probably got tired of both the players on ice a little bit. I still think, and maybe it's by probably more right now, just based on the fact that Kane and Bogosian Bogosian hasn't been healthy for all that year, and Kane hasn't put up the totals that some expected or hoped that he would from on the other end. And Myers has really played a strong, confident game. See, the Drew Stafford thing is, from the Jets' perspective, is going to be when you sign up to 2 years, he's played really well. He provides offense. But from Buffalo's perspective, he was a goner. Like, he was a pending UFA they weren't going to bring back. So I don't think they're really worried about the Drew Stafford angle if you're in the Buffalo perspective. But certainly, you know, Brendan Lemieux, Player of the Month in the OHL, and Jack Horosovich has played well in NCAA. So you have to feel as though the Jets got out ahead at this point. Now, can you judge a trade right now? Well, you know, there 2-3 years from now, that might be different. But I certainly think right now it's been even more probably slanted for the Jets than I thought.
Yeah, and we knew that this trade wasn't going to be based on how the players involved performed in 1 year. It's going to be a 3-5 year process, right? And Vander Kane isn't having the year that he'd like. He had injury problems. Zach Bogosian's also missed some games. He's only played 24 games this year. Both will be in the lineup, but both players are not at the level that they would like to be. Kane, 8 goals, and Bogo's only got 1 goal. So based on the performances of players that are currently in the NHL, you'd say, okay, well, Tyler Myers, he had an excellent game a couple nights ago against the Dallas Stars.
It's been good.
And Drew Stafford's been very good, especially since moving to the second line and now on the first line. So you'd say, okay, easily the Jets win. And then, as Richie mentioned, then you throw in the prospects, Brendan Lemieux, Joel Armia.
I didn't mention Armia either.
And then Jack Roslovic, who, you know, he's a couple years away from being in the NHL, most likely. So you'd say, again, you throw the prospects in, and that even tilts the Jets' trade more in their favor, right? So I still see why the Sabres and Jets made this trade, but it will ultimately come down to if Evander Kane reaches his potential, becomes that 40-goal, 70-point guy, and if Zach Bogosian turns into that shutdown defenseman, and he's 25 years old, he can still do that. He's got to stay healthy, though. Both players have had injury problems throughout their career, Drew, but right now, if you're a Jets fan, you're liking that trade.
How surprised are you that, you know, about this report, you know, coming from Damian Cox, that Zach Bogosian had requested a trade out of Winnipeg as well? That's news to me.
Yeah, I heard rumblings that ice time and opportunity wise, he saw himself maybe differently than he was being used. I hadn't heard that he had formally asked for a trade as Cox is reporting. So I don't know if that's true or not. That's obviously the report, but I also never really understood why he would have it. I mean, Claude Noel just spoke about it in the last interview we just did there. He had opportunity, so I don't know. And he's never going to be the offensive dynamo. Maybe that he thinks he's going to be. I don't know if he thinks that or not, but I don't think he'll be that guy. So I thought he was given more than fair opportunity and ice time wise and logging pretty big minutes. So yeah, that was you know, I know that there was some off ice stuff that that kind of seems to follow certain guys around, and all of it essentially, or all of it's unsubstantiated. So maybe that was a factor as well. I'm not sure, but that was a little bit surprising for sure.
Yeah, I agree with you, Rich.
More than a little bit, actually.
I think when Zach Bogosian signed the contract, the 7-year contract with the Winnipeg Jets, people saw 3-4 years down the road, maybe Bogo being a 50-point defenseman. And I agree with you. I think he's more of a shutdown defenseman. He can definitely add an offensive flair. I mean, he's better than his stats indicate right now. 1 goal, 4 assists. For the Buffalo Sabres. He's better than that. But I don't think that you'll ever see him top 10 in the NHL amongst defensemen scoring. And I think he has struggled with some of the issues off ice, injuries, and he never reached his full potential. And that's one of the reasons why he was included in the trade with Evander Kane, right? So as we know, guys, defensemen take longer to develop. And you could say, okay, well, I mean, how long is it going to take? He's 25 years old now. He should probably be where he needs to be. But I think injuries have derailed his career to a certain extent, and I think the Buffalo Sabres know that, and I think they're going to wait. But I agree with Rich. Maybe he's not that top-pair defenseman that people thought he was going to be. He's maybe better suited to a second-pair role where he can play 21, 22 minutes as opposed to, you know, being a guy that like Myers, who maybe is up in 25, 26 minutes.
Well, I think Bogosian can play it, but it depends on how much offense you want, right? I mean, Myers is going to give you more offense, so if you want to give a lot of that time to more offense. The other thing is, you know, injuries. These aren't like fragile guys who are soft, because there are those guys who are fragile and they
get injured. Bogo plays a heavy game.
They both play heavy games.
Yep.
And so to think that they're going to not be injured, well, okay, maybe that happens. Maybe it's the string of bad luck, whatever it may be. But if they change their game to not get injured, then they are less effective.
You know, at what point in time we talk about expectations? And, you know, you talk about Evander Kane was a 30-goal scorer. And he was. But he hasn't been for so many years now. And Zach Bogosian has never really developed and rounded out into be that, you know, sort of top two NHL defenseman. At what point in time, both these guys are, you know, approaching, you know, Bogosian's almost going to be 26 and Kane's going to be 25. At what point in time are these guys just who they are? I mean,
I've thought all along, you know, I don't think my perspective, at least personally, has changed really of these players. But I will say that a guy like Tyler Myers, for example, Bill Hoppe talked about getting back to the level that he was at before. Started off his career with Calder Trophy,
sure.
Struggled for a while, came back. So, and they're similar ages. So it doesn't mean that you can't gain confidence. That's the thing. Is it a confidence thing? But the players as a whole aren't going to change who they are and what they do. I mean, Zach Bogosian and Evander Kane, we said it on the day they got traded. The Jets got smarter in the trade. They got more hockey sense. They got smarter.
Mm-hmm.
Those guys can skate. Those guys are physical. Those guys work hard, and they play hard. And they can both shoot the puck. They can do things like that. But you're not going to change the fabric of the player. You can argue you're not going to change the fabric of the player from 18 to 20. Never mind 20 to 25.
Sure. Evander Kane, it seems like, you know, we know he's got the skill set. If the game was played on paper, he's big, he's fast, he's got a laser of a shot. But it just seems like he's predictable as a player on ice.
Well, he is. That's 100% accurate, Drew.
And so if he's predictable, and if he I haven't watched, you know, a ton of Sabres games this year, but it seems like he's similar to what he was in Winnipeg.
What would change?
Well, if he's never going to change from being predictable, isn't he just sort of a one-trick pony and he's easy to defend against?
Well, I mean, a couple of things. Well, being a one-trick pony, if the one trick is scoring, you're always going to have a spot.
Right, but
okay?
I mean,
and if you can skate as fast as he, you know, Drew, a lot of, it's not like the NBA where you actually know every play that's coming all the time. But the NHL, it's a fluid game. At the same time, a lot of, you know what Sidney Crosby is going to do a lot of the time. You just can't stop him.
I agree with Richie, too. And, you know, you look at Evander Kane, he's got 117 goals in 392 games. Has he become too much of a predictable player, Drew? Yes, I think he has. Mm-hmm. And I think that is one of the reasons why he fell out of favor at times with both Claude Noel and Paul Maurice. There wasn't enough attention to the defensive side of the game. But listen, Kane and Bogosian are both visceral players. I mean, these guys are physical players. They like to get engaged physically. They like to drop the gloves when they need to. We've seen Evander Kane do that. I don't know if he's dropped the gloves yet this year in Buffalo, but he dropped the gloves many times in Winnipeg, probably because of his name, right? Named after the real deal, Holyfield. But no, I mean, Kane, as Richie mentioned, he had the 30-goal year the first year the Jets were here. But to me, really, you still can't totally write Evander Kane off because he just hasn't stayed healthy. He's never played a full season aside from the lockout year in the NHL.
Right.
He only played 37 games last year for the Jets, and he's missed time already this mm-hmm. year. I mean, if you have a full year of Evander Kane, yeah, he's a 30-goal, 60-point guy. And the Sabres are probably hoping for more than that, right? But when you throw in the physical side of his game, I wouldn't say he's necessarily a one-trick pony, but I would say that he does need to evolve his game.
If you're gonna play 82 games, which he hasn't to date, he's probably gonna exceed 300 shots, right?
Sure. Like, he always shoots. I mean, there's no denying that.
So that's one of the things. I don't know if it gets 300, but already he's got 115 in 31. So, you know, he gets a lot of shots on net. If you get that many shots on net, some of them are gonna go in. And that's what Dan Bylsma, if you read in preparing for the show, you're looking at Dan Bylsma saying Kane could have 12 to 15 goals right now. Some of these he thought would go in and haven't gone in. But, well, you know, that goes both ways in terms of predictability as well. But, you know, if he does play, if he stays healthy and plays, he'll get you your 25. Again, somebody, and I understand the skeptical. He hasn't played 82, and he's only had one season where he's exceeded 19. But again.
Yeah. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about tomorrow afternoon's game from the fans' point of view, the emotion that'll be coursing through the veins of MTS Center. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. sort of hard to think about it given it's so bitterly cold outside, but Illegal Curve Hockey is thrilled to be participating in the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life coming up in June the 5th, 2016. Join IC in raising money for the Riverview Health Center Foundation's Alzheimer's and Dementia Wards by cycling in the event or contributing to Team Illegal Curve. For more information about the Riverview Health Center Foundation's Cycle on Life, or to join Team Illegal Curve, visit rhcf.mb.ca or send us a tweet at Illegal Curve, and we will be happy to provide you with more information on how to get involved. You guys been training in the off season?
I'm always training, Drew. I'm in training 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, 366 days a year during a leap year.
It is a leap year.
So I'm always training.
What do you do to train?
Just everything. I mean, I do yoga, I do meditation, weights, planking, TRX, and the most important thing is nutrition. You always, I mean, your body is your temple, Drew. You got to make sure that you only put the good stuff in. The Illegal Curve sandwich.
Doctor recommends.
Tomorrow. Richie, I just can't believe that Drew, during the commercial break, switched into another tracksuit. He was wearing a black tracksuit before, and now he's wearing a blue tracksuit.
Wow, Drew is...
I come prepared, you know, gentlemen. I definitely come prepared with multiple
Where are you getting all these tracksuits? Is that from the tracksuit district? Like, where are you getting all these?
Yeah, exactly. I actually have a supplier of tracksuits. He's just shuttling me tracksuits in through the back door here at TSN 1290 constantly.
Well, it's a tearaway tracksuit, so just keep your pants on, Drew.
Yeah.
Tomorrow afternoon, obviously, the return of Kane and Bogosian.
Is it true? We haven't talked about that at all today.
Not at all. Not in the least bit. But you know what? It's like you said at the start, you know, it's, you know, when you get through an 82-game season, you have to get on to the games that are more interesting than the other ones, and this is certainly one of them. You know, in Winnipeg sporting history, and, you know, we go back, you know, we have a memory of, you know, 25 years. I have a memory of about 65 years.
Right.
You know, I'm much older than you guys, of course.
Andrew, you're talking about the stadium being on Osborne for
Yes, old Osborne Stadium, you know, the house that, you know, Jack Jacobs built, or whichever former bomber it was back in the day. I don't remember. You know, in Winnipeg sporting history, has there ever been a player as viscerally disliked by the Winnipeg fan base as Evander Kane?
I mean, for our rec, from our generation,
sure,
I'd say probably not. I think it goes back to what we were talking about with Claude Noel, with the accessibility of players and Twitter and things like that, and messages getting out there, and there's just more attention to things.
Mm-hmm.
Would it have been different if those things were accessible when the Jets were here before? I'm not sure, but I don't think there was ever a player, you know, fans get on the goalies and such, but you are right, Drew, it's a real anger that seems to have been created here, and it's going to be on full display tomorrow, so I would be hard-pressed to say that there is.
And Richie, I think the fans in Winnipeg and their relationship with Evander Kane has a lot to do with the first season, and Evander Kane, I don't think, got off to the best start with the fans and all the stuff that was going on Twitter and everything like that. And some fans weren't happy with that. They didn't like how Evander Kane wasn't really, I guess, showing the love for Winnipeg.
Well, that,
like Winnipeg was showing the love for Evander Kane.
That's, I think, as you nailed it, that is the big thing here. Forget all the other stuff. If Evander Kane did whatever he wanted and just said he loved Winnipeg once, the fans would probably like him.
Because, Drew, I don't think for a second that fans didn't want... I mean, you look around Winnipeg, and there are still tons of Evander Kane jerseys. I mean, this guy was arguably the most talented player on the team before he was traded, right? I mean, no disrespect to Blake Wheeler, or Dustin Byfuglien, or Andrew Ladd. I mean,
I think people expected him to be that talented. Then they saw him play, and they realized he wasn't.
Yeah.
He was more. He just didn't.
Well,
you know,
he scored 30 goals in year one.
Yeah, he did. But I mean, I think if you took an, you know, if he was completely healthy and you looked at the entire team, you'd say that Blake Wheeler has developed into a more
right, but that's
a better hockey
right,
player than Evander
sure,
Kane.
Sure.
But I'm talking more so before, you know,
sure,
the first couple years.
People wanted to cheer for Evander Kane.
Absolutely, and that's why you saw so many number nine jerseys, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I agree with Rich. I mean, I think it's going to be tons of fun tomorrow afternoon at the MTS Center with tracksuits and signs and all that. I just hope that it's respectful. because Winnipeg, we've all called Winnipeg our home our entire lives, but we don't want this to turn to anything nasty or rude or anything like that. Have fun. Wear the tracksuits. Make some signs. You know, boo him. If you're paying $100 plus per ticket, you have the right to boo Evander Kane if you want, but just keep it classy because Winnipeg's a classy city.
Well, anytime that there's been sort of that electricity in the air, it's always been with a very, it's been done very cleverly. The fans have always been clever with their mocking or with their chants. I mean, what was it? Getzlaff's hairline, was that what it was in the playoffs last year? Something like that, you know, which is, you know, a little cheeky, but there's nothing offensive about it, really. I mean, you know, it's funny, and keep it at that classy level.
Well, that's the thing. Again, I'm not trying to be the fun police here, but I mean, it's going to be a fun atmosphere tomorrow at MTS Center. But you know, there's going to be kids there. There's going to be family there, and you just don't want it to be a situation where fans are being insulting and disrupting other fans' ability to enjoy the game. That's all I'm saying.
Sure.
But by all means, wear the tracksuits. I'm a huge fan of this tracksuit night. I think it's going to be great.
You expect Bogosian will get applause? And you expect any blowback to him at all?
He'll get applause, I think. I don't know if it won't be.
Especially from the ladies.
Overwhelming. But I think he'll get applause.
Yeah.
There'll be a certain not only is the game huge in terms of who's coming back and after the trade, but it's a big game for the Jets tomorrow. Obviously, they kind of all are here. So,
got to get the homestand off on the right foot.
It's the first game back from the longest road trip of the season, and they need the 2 points.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, again, we can't forget how important it is for the Jets to make hay here and get back into a playoff position. They're 4 points behind the Predators and Avalanche. You got to start off by beating a Sabres team that you just have to beat, just based on the fact that you're more talented than they are.
You know, I was thinking about this, you know, in preparing for the show. The only other sort of instance where a player returns to another city that I can think of that has this much emotion around it is when Vince Carter returned to the Toronto Raptors as a member of the New Jersey Nets.
Yep, that was an emotional one.
Yeah.
That lasted a long time.
Yeah. And then, I mean, time eventually healed all wounds there, and he got a nice ovation, a couple years ago.
He had greater success, though.
What's that?
He had greater success than the team had here.
Absolutely he did. But, I mean, that's the only one that sort of jumps to mind is that, you know, when Carter returned to Toronto, it was a raucous atmosphere, I guess, at Air Canada Center back in the day.
Yes.
And, you know, I guess I don't need to mention that Carter hit the game-winning shot for the New Jersey Nets that night. So you hope that, obviously, as a Jets fan, that the same thing doesn't occur. But, you know, other players in the NHL have requested trades. Jason Spezza requested a trade out of Ottawa.
Yeah, but Jason Spezza requested a trade after many years and took the team to the Stanley Cup final.
Sure.
It's different.
So it's just a function of that, you know, that player.
And he didn't openly, you know, I think the media pressure got to him eventually.
Mm-hmm.
And he was sick of it. And he had, remember, you have to understand also about Jason Spezza. Just, I know you're just tossing out as an example, Drew.
Yeah.
But the Mississauga Ice Dogs, number one. And this guy had pressure on him since he was 15, 16. Not that Kane hasn't, but the attention in the Toronto area and then going to Ottawa. And I think he just had enough. But that was 13, 14 years in the making.
Right. But and in that instance, I think to your point is, you know, Spezza gave a lot of, you know, heart and soul years and left a lot on the ice for the Ottawa Senators.
I think Evander Kane, say what you want, Evander Kane always brought his, played hard. Played offensively and defensively, he always played hard.
Yeah.
You can't say that he didn't.
Almost to his credit there. I mean, it's sort of, you would think that you've requested a trade away. You've, you know, made it clear you don't want to be here. Yet he was able to still sort of put that, you know, behind him and give, you're right, you can't criticize him for his effort. He was always, you know, an active and noticeable member of the Winnipeg Jets when he was on the ice.
And Drew, I think the fans, the lucky 15,000 plus fans that are going to be at the game tomorrow afternoon are going to have fun. But, you know, just talking about Evander Kane's return to Winnipeg and preparing for the show, I think Jets fans are going to have a new respect for Evander Kane because he's going to have to kind of endure, you know, some of the booing and the signs and stuff like that. I think I do think that fans are going to have a little bit more respect for Evander Kane because of the fact that he was here for 3.5 years and they know at the end of the day that he's a good guy.
I think you're in the minority with that opinion. I don't think that at the end of the game tomorrow, there's going to be water under the bridge or anything. I think there's still going to be a dislike between the fan base and Evander Kane.
Another one our buddy Kevin just sent me is Johnny Damon going to Boston after signing with the Yankees. That was the Yankees-Boston dynamic, but there was a lot of hate there for going to the...
That was back in the day before, you know, it was almost unheard of a player going from Boston to New York.
Right.
We've seen since then Jacoby Ellsbury's done it, and I mean, it's now become just, you know, the way business is done in baseball.
I'm surprised we didn't even bring up LeBron.
LeBron, that's true. That's a good one. LeBron going.
But he's back now, so.
He's back now.
Maybe so Kane will come back to Winnipeg.
I wouldn't count on that, is what I'm going to say on that front, is I wouldn't count on that. But it will be an interesting atmosphere tomorrow afternoon, of course, at MTS Center. Game time, 2 p.m. Our coverage on TSN 1290 begins with Hustler and Lawless at 11 in the morning tomorrow. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to speak with Chuck Gormley of CSN, MidAtlantic.com, talk about the Washington Capitals, and talk about Mike Richards joining that franchise. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. Third and final hour of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show for this Saturday morning. This segment brought to you by Frank Zappia and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtor of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com or at 204-772-2100.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Chuck Gormley. Chuck covers the Washington Capitals for CSN MidAtlantic.com. Chuck, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me. It should be a fun day for hockey today.
Absolutely, it should be. The Caps, I believe, are at Madison Square Garden in about an hour's time, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, yeah, it'll be Holtby against Lundqvist. And as you guys know, Alex Ovechkin, 3 away from 500. So he's never scored a hat trick against the Rangers in 41 games. He's got 24 goals, but no hat tricks. I'm sure Henrik Lundqvist will have something to say about that today.
It should be an entertaining contest between the Capitals and the Rangers. Chuck, obviously brought you on to talk about the Caps and, you know, more specifically, the decision to sign Mike Richards to a one-year, $1 million contract prorated. You know, why did the Capitals organization make that decision to sign Mike Richards?
Well, two reasons. One is that they didn't have to give up anything to get him. And two is I think that they thought down the middle, behind Nicholas Backstrom and Evgeny Kuznetsov, they had Jay Beagle as their third-line centerman. He was having a pretty good season until he injured his hand and he's out for 6 weeks. But I think even before that injury, they thought that maybe they could add a little bit more offensive punch to that third line, make themselves a little more balanced for the playoff run, and have a guy who's done it in the playoffs. I mean, everybody talks about how the Caps went out and got Justin Williams, who's 7-0 in Game 7. But so is Mike Richards. And I think that's something that attracted them. It was a high-risk or low-risk, high-reward move. And I think they're hoping that they can get that reward. I think a lot of people were concerned about Mike Richards, and he's got a lot to prove.
Chuck, you wrote about this on CSNMidAtlantic.com that Richards, of course, practiced for the first time with the Capitals on Friday, and he won't play for the Capitals until he's had at least three or four high-paced practices, and there is even an option to go down to the AHL if Barry Trotz feels Mike Richards needs to go into the AHL. So having said that, what do you think the earliest that Mike Richards will be in the lineup?
Well, he skated yesterday. There's a lot to learn for him. He hired a personal trainer over the summertime, so he says he's in pretty good shape, but he's definitely not in game shape. The Caps play again tomorrow night at home against Ottawa, and then they've got 3 days where they can hit the ice, and I think we'll see a couple guys on the ice over those 3 days. Obviously, Mike Richards will be one. Brooke Orpik could hit the ice on Monday, and John Carlson, who's also been out, I think, the last 6-7 games, he'll be on the ice. So I'm thinking that we'll need at least those three practices, and at that point, they'll make a determination whether it's a good idea for him to go to Hershey, who plays next weekend, or to just suit up and play for the Capitals against, I think it's Vancouver next Thursday night. So they've got some options. I don't think they're going to rush him. I talked to Brian McClellan, the general manager, yesterday. He said he'd like to see Mike be in a good position. He doesn't want to put him in a position like right now where they're short a couple centermen. He doesn't want to put him in a position where he can't be successful. So I think we're going to, it'll be a little while, but I think within a week we'll see him playing game action.
Chuck, considering the Capitals' success so far this year, it's amazing. They've only lost 7 games in regulation. Are you surprised to see that this team has decided to change up the chemistry a little bit?
You know, that's the big question every GM faces this time of year. You know, especially when you're playing well, do you go out and make that move? I talked to a few of the guys in the room. I kind of had inklings about this for the past few weeks. And Justin Williams said, you know, that's something the GMs have to weigh. You know, do you bring in a guy who potentially could be a distraction? And Justin Williams pretty much assured management that Mike Richards would not and that he was worth the risk. So I agree with you. I think that sometimes when you're playing this well, you can leave things as they are, or you can be an aggressive GM. And I think I give Brian McMillan some credit for going out and making this move, because you never know, as the Caps are finding out right now, you never know how healthy you're going to be in the playoffs.
Chuck, you covered the Flyers for many years, and of course Mike Richards being a Flyer for the beginning of, for the large portion of his career. When you covered him on a daily basis, what would you say his biggest strength of his game was, and the biggest weakness?
Well, his biggest strengths, I think, are still what attracts him to other teams. He's so feisty. He's a bulldog on the ice. I think it was Daryl Sutter who recently said to a reporter, if I threw a quarter out on the ice, I would bet that Mike Richards would be the one who would find it and bring it back. Mm-hmm. He's that type of player who's going to fight for every inch of space he gets. I remember when he broke into the league, he had already stopped Alex Ovechkin in the World Juniors, and he neutralized him as much as you can neutralize Alex Ovechkin in the playoffs that year. The Flyers won in 7 games. And he's just one of those guys that makes you earn every inch of ice that you earn on the ice. And I think he's just a guy, I've seen him lead. I've seen him take out David Krejci in a playoff series that completely turned the series around. The Flyers were down 3-0 against Boston in the series and came back and won in 7 games. And a lot of people will point to that big hit. So he recognizes things about the game that allows him to make a difference. The weaknesses I saw then, and I think I still see now, is the foot speed. I mean, his quickness has certainly deteriorated over the years, mm-hmm. and that's going to be the big question in my eyes. You know, can this guy make a difference on the ice by getting the puck? Justin Williams is not the fastest guy in the league, but he can get the puck. He takes the right route almost every time, and Mike Richards is going to have to do the same thing.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Chuck Gormley. Chuck covers the Washington Capitals for CSNMidAtlantic.com. We're discussing the Capitals' signing of Mike Richards. And Chuck, do you expect that Mike Richards is going to get power play time, or do you think that Barry Trotz will deploy him strictly in a checking role to start?
I think he's going to be in a checking role. Their power play is humming along quite well. They've got enough forwards there with Marcus Johansson and Nick Backstrom and Evgeny Kuznetsov really dishing pucks. I don't see their power play needing that help. Their penalty kill has actually been strong too, but with Jay Beagle out of the lineup for another 5 or 6 weeks, it's definitely on the penalty kill that we'll see a lot of Mike Richards. We'll also see him on the fourth line, maybe the third line, depending on what the Caps want to do. Andre Burakovsky has taken over for Marcus Johansson on the second line. So a lot depends on health. You know, I think ultimately you're going to see Mike Richards and Jay Beagle splitting a lot of that time in the bottom two lines and seeing a lot of penalty kill time. I don't think they're going to overtax him in the beginning, and I don't think they'll have to.
Chuck, are you aware of how many other teams there were that were interested in signing Mike Richards?
I don't know how many, but I talked to Mike yesterday, and he said there was pretty strong interest from other teams. I'd love to know how many. He did say it was more than one team, probably more than 2 teams, because he said other than the Capitals, there were other teams interested. But there were a lot of hoops to jump through. He had a meet with Gary Bettman and Bill Daly on Monday, I believe, and they had to give him clearance. And I'm sure he's been told, you know, you've got to keep your nose clean, and you've got to, you know, make sure that you take advantage of this opportunity.
I was just going to ask you, Chuck, about that meeting. I for one, thought the way that it was all handled in terms of LA being able to settle that contract, which seemed to be something that no other team was able to do, and Gary Bettman and Bill Daly then had to talk to Mike Richards. Was there anything of substance really discussed there, or is that one of those things where they had to say to the media that they met in order to make this look a little better?
I don't know. I don't know. Mike didn't divulge a whole lot more than the fact that he met with those two guys. And Mike wasn't real forthcoming when it came to exactly what happened in L.A. And why he spent so much time out of the league. Maybe there are some legal reasons behind that, but he seemed to be more appreciative of the people who have been there for him than to talk a whole lot about what kept him out of the league for so long. So it's a good question. I wish I could answer that, but I think until Mike addresses that, or anyone else, really, it's going to be hard for anyone to tell.
Chuck Gormley is our guest here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, discussing the Capitals and their signing of Mike Richards. Piggybacking on Richards' question there, Chuck, you know, if the expectation is, you know, as per Caps GM Brian McClellan, that, you know, Richards' pending legal situation won't become an issue, doesn't it make you wonder why so much was made about the situation in the first place?
Well, we have to find, there's so much more that I think a lot of us don't know. And maybe January 28th, when he has his hearing, we'll know more. But I've also read that a lot of those hearings can be postponed, and that's something that Brian McClellan said the other night. This could go on for a long time. It could go on even past the season. So there must have been enough knowledge from the Capitals to know that this was not going to impede Mike's ability to play the game from a legal standpoint. So I'm guessing, just in what I've been told, that the Capitals were confident enough to know that legally Mike would be able to get through these next couple court hearings if they actually happen.
Chuck, we've just got a couple more questions for you here. You mentioned Brooks Orpik earlier, and he's obviously been out since early November, and he's such a big part of the Caps' decor. Is there any specific date that the Capitals and Orpik are targeting for his return?
Well, actually, Brian McClellan told me yesterday that he could be on the ice on Monday. No. He has not been on the ice since December 7th, hasn't played since November 10th, I believe. So it's been a long wait. The Caps were in Boston earlier in the week. He visited a specialist there and was given some assurances that he will be able to return this season. So it's one of the questions I had for McClellan when I talked to him about the trade deadline. He said, that's not something that we're considering. We're not looking at adding a big-name defenseman because we believe that Brooks Orpik will be okay. He said he's not even thinking about mid-February revisiting the situation because he thinks by then Orpik will be playing and it really won't be an issue. So one thing I can say is that if Orpik is not playing and he's not recovering, the Caps will certainly go out and look for a big-name defenseman.
And it was reported, Chuck, last question, it was reported this week that possibly that would be Dustin Bufflin, of course, from Winnipeg. I don't necessarily see the fit just with Carlson and Niskanen, if both healthy on the right side there. Are you hearing that's a possibility, Bufflin, or would it be maybe more of a shutdown left-side guy similar to what Orpik is?
It depends. I mean, they're both looking at the same salary, so I think they're right around the 5.2 range, and if you put Orpik on LTIR, then it's a possibility. I kind of agree with you. I think last season the Caps went a little smaller, went after some depth on the back end, and I wouldn't be surprised if they did that again. You never have enough defensemen in the playoffs, especially the guys with NHL experience. And I don't think that they'd ever deal with the Rangers or the Rangers would deal with them, but we're hearing Keith Yandel's name a lot in the last few days, too. Mm-hmm.
Chuck Gormley covers the Washington Capitals for CSNMidAtlantic.com. Chuck, really appreciate your time this morning. Enjoy the Capitals and the Rangers from Madison Square Garden coming up in about an hour's time. And again, thanks very much for joining us and for the insight.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Take care, Chuck. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll discuss the 5-year contract extension handed out to Dallas Stars general manager Jim Neal. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.
Well, you know, I've been very fortunate. I have some great mentors. You know, I came from a great organization. This is how they operated, and this is how we want to operate. And it's important to have that, you know, I talk about the foundation and to do things right every day. Do it. When you do things right every day, good things happen. And that's where we're getting to with this team. And, you know, it starts at the top with our ownership group and our coaches. So it's good.
There's Dallas Stars general manager Jim Nill. He received a 5-year contract extension from the Stars organization earlier, I guess earlier yesterday, Friday morning is when it was officially announced. No real surprise for a tremendous general manager. This segment of the program brought to you by our friends at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper fitting custom made mouth guard is a must have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226, or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Where would you rank Jim Nill as part of among the NHL's general managers? Is he a top 5 general manager in the NHL?
Oh, yeah, I think so. Top 3, probably.
Really? That high?
Yeah. If I'm starting a team, he'd be... He might be number one in the people I would want to be the GM.
Over Brendan Shanahan?
Well, at least have 30 GMs. So, I mean, that's like a 30-team league with 60 GMs. But, no, I think him, Kenny Holland is up there for sure. I really like what Brad Treliving is doing in Calgary. I think he's a sharp guy. But Bergevin's done a nice job. But Jim Nill, for me, he's done a... Brian McClellan's somebody we don't talk about at all, but that team's really coming together. But Jim Nill is as good as anyone as far as I'm concerned.
And if you look at what he's done since replacing Joe Nieuwendyk in, was it 2013?
April 29th, 2013 is when he was signed as general manager away from the Detroit Red Wings organization.
Stars didn't have Tyler Seguin. They didn't have Jason Spezza. They didn't have Patrick Sharp. They didn't have Johnny Oduya. I mean... These are all players that Jim Nill has brought in either via trade or via free agency, right, Richie? And the Dallas Stars right now are leading the Central. They're leading the West. They're only 1 point behind the Washington Capitals for most points overall in the NHL. I mean, last year was a hiccup as far as I'm concerned.
I agree, but I don't think they're even done. Like, I think he doesn't think they're as good as they can be. Like, he wants to add more on the back end still.
Yeah. You looked at Dallas on Thursday night, and I didn't think their defense was good enough to be a Stanley Cup winner.
That's fair. Might be fair. I mean, they might be exceeding what he had expected from them. But quickly, in terms of his time as general manager, I mean, the Stars got some other guys in these trades, you know, Peverly and guys like that who obviously, unfortunately, had to retire. But this is what, as you just mentioned, those players, okay? Tyler Seguin, Jason Spezza, and Patrick Sharp. Mm-hmm. All bona fide top six guys. I mean, I think Seguin is probably, in my opinion, he's the most dynamic forward in the league. That's, you guys know that. That's how I feel about him. I think I picked him for MVP this year, although it looks like Kane is on his way for that, Patrick Kane. But Seguin, Sharp, and Spezza. This is what he gave up. Erickson, Morrow, Smith, Fraser. Okay?
Yeah.
Chiasson, Guptill, Paul, a second-round pick, Trevor Daley, Ryan Garbutt for those three dynamic players. It's pretty incredible.
Sure. Nothing of any significance that they're missing from their roster. Really.
Well, no, I'm not saying that guys like Robbie Smith and Louis Erickson are both good players, and they're both top six guys. But you're talking big time. Spezza and Seguin are big time NHL talents. And Sharp is that obviously resurgence playing with guys like that.
Sure.
So, I mean, not that he was playing with bad players in Chicago, but it's just amazing what he's done. And what I love about Jim Nill is he's not afraid, and we've had Dallas guys on before, he's not afraid to follow what he believes. I mean, he makes a decision on a player and he makes a move. This team years ago was not in any of a better position than the Winnipeg Jets were. You could argue they're in a worse position. And he goes out and makes a ton of moves, is not afraid to make a trade and fail, and has turned the franchise around. Done a masterful job.
And Richie, the proof is really in the pudding, and not Drew's pudding, because he wouldn't share that.
Yeah, well, there wouldn't be any.
The Dallas Stars right now
keep it in my pockets of my third tracksuit. I mean, do you really want to eat it out of there?
But Drew, they're at the top of the hill, and they're looking down at all the other teams below them, right?
Yeah.
So you look at some of the prospects they gave up, Richie, and you'd say, okay, well, you know, they lost a little bit of youth and they lost some prospects. Not too many of those players are exactly lighting it up in the NHL right now. And he was opportunistic to get Jason Spezza from Ottawa. He won that trade. I don't think anybody's going to sit here and say that Jim Nill didn't win that trade. And you know, we should mention too, I mean, Richie knows this and you know this too, Jim Nill plied his trade for years under Ken Holland, right? Who I know Richie is a big fan of. He's a top GM and has been for many years, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like this, he's a new GM by any stretch of the imagination, but to turn the team around, and Joe Noondike, you know, a huge fan of his as a hockey player, but I mean, his track record as a GM was not good.
It was not good, and I agree with you that it wasn't good. We will say we had Frank Provenzano on a bunch of times on this show, and he did allude to the fact that the old ownership versus the new ownership has been a significant factor in the management.
It's a good point.
Sure.
And that is a very good point. If you don't have the support of ownership and there's no clear direction, it is tough to do your job.
Yes.
That is a good point, Richie. And Frank Provenzano, obviously, you know, a good fan of the show, friend of the show, pardon me, mm-hmm. and he did an excellent
job
there as well.
He's a fan of the show, too. I mean, if he's a friend of the show, you'd hope he'd be a fan of the show as well.
Well, we'll see if we can get him on next time. If he says no, then he's not a fan of the show.
I guess so. You know, in addition to the Sagan and Sharp and Spezza acquisitions, he goes out, I mean, he signs John Klingberg to a big 7-year contract extension for $4.25 million per year. That looks like an absolute steal right now, given the way that Klingberg's been performing. Is, you know, one of the, you know, the top-ranked defensemen in terms of points per game.
Well, because he makes a decision on a player, and he's bold about it. He determines what he thinks, and he makes that move, and he signs a player. You know, I also like Drew. Is that he's not afraid to kind of try something different. The Antti Niemi trading for him, then signing him to a contract. You're paying your goaltenders a ton of money, mm-hmm. more than most. But you're saying, okay, I think the Finnish player will help my other younger Finnish goaltender, who's not that young anymore, Lehtinen.
Same age.
Yeah, but okay, yeah, you're right. Sorry, same age.
Yeah, you think of Carey Lehtinen as so young.
Yeah, I think he'll compliment him. The talent level, the fact he's won a cup. Mm-hmm. I'm going to invest maybe more in my goalies because of the roster and the way we spend our money, and we have some cheap guys. Like on the back end, their back end is pretty cheap. We're going to make this decision, even though it's not conventional. I like that, too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and it's not like the, you know, you mentioned all the trades. It's certainly not like the prospect pool in Dallas is empty as a result of the trades. They still have well-regarded players like Julius Honka coming up through the organization, their first-round pick last year. I mean, it's almost a blessing in disguise.
And Nikushkin, we haven't really talked about.
Well, Nikushkin, you haven't really talked about, and he's been, I mean, you expect that he's just going to continue to be more and more dynamic, even though he's been a little bit of a slow year this year with 15 points in 40 games after last year with the hip injury. But, you know, last year, you know, they're so bad, you know, bizarrely, I mean, that they were that bad.
Well, they just got off to such a poor start, mm-hmm. and they never really recovered. But I want to, you know, go back to what Richie was talking about with Antti Niemi, kind of more of an unheralded move. Everybody knows about Sagan and Spezza and mm-hmm. all the huge moves. Also, you know, even last year trading Brendan Dillon to San Jose for Jason Demers,
right.
traded a left-shot defenseman for a right-shot defenseman.
And a tough defenseman and a stay-at-home guy
right,
for a puck mover.
Because they needed more puck-moving defensemen. That's one of the reasons why they went out and they got Johnny Oduya, right? Even though he's a little bit older now, he's maybe turned into a bit of a stay-at-home defenseman. He does have that ability to rush the puck and provide some offense when he can. So I think the point is that he makes trades, and sometimes he doesn't make trades necessarily that, especially in the salary cap world, that you think might benefit the team. And I think Demers is, I like Brendan Dillon too, but I think Demers is a better defenseman, certainly offensively. So I like that move. And as Richie mentioned, he's slowly kind of chipped away at this team. And I think everybody here in this room knew that Dallas was going to be a better team than they were last year. I mean, most people had Dallas in the playoffs last year, and I think they're proving us right by how well they're playing, certainly in the first half of the season.
Last year was an anomaly.
You want to know how many trades he's made since April 2013?
You can count them up.
I haven't counted them. I'm asking you, how many do you think he's made?
I mean, I can count them up too.
Well, yeah, but Drew, that's not the
point. I'll say 7 or 8.
I think it's
trades.
Closer to about
13 trades.
He's 13? I mean, there hasn't been 13 trades in 3 years in the NHL with the exception of the trade deadline.
13 trades.
You're right. He's a general manager who assesses his team honestly, sees weaknesses or sees strengths, and looks to make a trade to accommodate that.
And they don't all work out. We're not going to pretend here that they all work out, but he's willing to take the chance. I mean, the Tim Thomas trade, Tim Thomas didn't do anything for them.
Yeah.
He was terrible.
Thomas.
Hey, you take chances, right?
Sure. And I mean, you look at, and I still think that, I mean, even though this is the best team in the Western Conference right now, I expect that they'd be in the market to add a defenseman before the trade deadline.
I thought so at the beginning of the season. I do still believe that. I mean, I know they have some guys in the system that they like, but if you are where you are in terms of the standings now, you want a guy who can a little more experience.
If you can get a defensive defenseman, shut down guys aren't readily available, but a guy who's responsible in his own zone and everything else, I mean, there's no reason why they couldn't be the Western Conference representative in the Stanley Cup Finals. I mean, they're 6 points up on the Blackhawks in the Central Division. It's a good team. Jim Nill is a good general manager, well-deserving of a five-year contract extension. Let's head to break. When we come back, John Rosen joins us. He's the LA Kings insider. We'll talk to him about their acquisitions of LeCavalier and Shen. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290 alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and your home for Manitoba Moose and Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program the Los Angeles Kings insider, John Rosen.
Chosen Rosen,
apparently. John, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure, and I like the nickname, too. I'm going to run with that, actually.
as long as you give credit to Ezzy, then you're fine with that. Although if you're in public acknowledging Ezzy, you might want to reconsider that decision. John, obviously brought you on to talk about the deal that the Kings made earlier this week, acquiring Vinny LeCavalier and Luke Shen from the Philadelphia Flyers. Were you surprised to see the Kings make this move earlier in the week?
Not really. I think it addresses a couple of needs that the Kings had been looking for at the start of the season. Keep in mind that throughout all of this, the Kings did lose a little bit of a veteran presence within the room, with players like Robin Regier having retired. And then players like Jarrett Stoll and Mike Richards, who had moved on and were such an emotional lifeblood and team pulse of this Kings team. And with that sort of, I don't want to say leadership void, but a little bit of a younger team this year, it was probably going to be expected that the Kings would address that. And in doing so, you look at this Kings team, and even though they have had this success in the year, they're now 26-12-2. This is a team that if you were going to look at maybe a couple things that could be upgraded, it would be that defensive depth and probably the depth down the center of the ice. The Kings in their Stanley Cup seasons had been a team that, when you look right down the middle, having Kopitar, Carter a couple of years ago did play that center position, Mike Richards, Jarrett Stoll, that is that type of depth that you need to compete against the Anaheim, teams like other teams that have that terrific depth going up against Joe Thornton and the San Jose Sharks repeatedly. And on top of that, the story so far for this Kings team, and one of the reasons that they've had this success this year, has because of their young defensive core, where players, a couple guys have maybe stepped up a rung defensively, Braden McNabb, Jake Muzzin, Alec Martinez, all earning more minutes, and they're doing a great job in doing so. But you've heard Daryl Sutter also speak about how he's looking for a little bit more from the third pairing. And previously, before the trade, you've been seeing a little bit of a rotation between guys like Derek Forbert, Jamie McBain, Christian Ehrhoff, kind of getting to a little bit of rotation. No one had really seized that. With Matt Green having been lost for the year, the Kings were going to be looking to probably get somebody up on that right side that could eat more minutes. And in doing so, they picked up Luke Shen, who in his first game with the Kings played 16.5 minutes of hockey, and is somebody that can provide a little bit more minutes than the ones that had been provided before the trade. So kind of fills a bunch of needs, gets a guy in there that has a little bit of that veteran presence in Vincent LeCavalier, helps out with their center depth down the middle, gets them a little bit bigger down the center of the ice, and also provides that right shot defensively, and another body back there that can provide better minutes on the back end.
John, what happens if Vincent LeCavalier chooses not to retire?
Oh, geez, that's a very interesting question, and I think that's probably on the back of people's minds. It's been one game. We haven't heard any indication that that would be something that would be considered at this point. I mean, that's just a hypothetical right now. But, of course, he has that cap hit. But, if he chooses not to retire, that's probably because he's, been productive, or if the Kings had a very strong finish to their season. I can't really gauge that right now at this point, since the indications and everything that I've heard, both from, the Kings hockey operations and from Vincent itself, is that, the choice to retire had been something that had been coming for quite some time.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by John Rosen, the LA Kings insider. John, it's sort of a unique situation that both Mike Richards signing in Washington and the Kings being able to acquire LeCavalier and Shen almost happened relatively simultaneous on Wednesday. Do you think there's animosity throughout the NHL in regards to the Kings having had the cap space available to make the acquisition of Shen and LeCavalier only because they were able to reach that settlement on the Mike Richards contract and the situation tied in there?
You know, I haven't heard that directly from, you know, opposing teams or executives from other teams, but I can just go back and point to, I guess, the Elliot Friedman, I believe it was a 30 Thoughts article where there were some people across the league, did not appreciate the settlement that the Kings reached with Richards, but they did everything that had been in their power in the CBA, and you know they did terminate the contract, which was something that they did have a right to do. This was also a Kings team that had the option the previous year to have a buyout with no salary cap repercussions. One of the two buyouts that they would have been able to use, and chose not to do that, keep him on. So just from a personal standpoint with Richards, Kings gave him that opportunity and wanted to see him come back strong, come back healthy. It just wasn't the case where Mike Richards, last season, it's just from an on-ice perspective, I can't speak anything off the ice, but it just didn't work out for this Kings team. And, everybody here wishes him, obviously, the best of luck in his new role in Washington. But, I can't speak from having spoken, directly with any other executives from any other teams to know exactly how they're feeling. But, yeah, probably I'm sure that it's something that had been discussed or thought of that the Kings did have that space to be able to make that move.
John, we wanted to ask you about Jordan Wheel, who's the player that went the other way in the trade to the Philadelphia Flyers in exchange for LeCavalier and Luke Shen. I know that he's had a couple of 100-point seasons with Regina and the WHL, and he's had a pretty good start to his pro career with Manchester in the AHL. But what can you tell us about Jordan Wheel as a hockey player?
A skilled center, somebody that I'm not quite sure yet, and that's something that he's going to have to go out and prove, is that because of his size, and he's maybe generously listed at 5'10", does he have the level of skill to offset that type of size that he has? And so far in this Kings team and in these Kings systems, it was hard for him to be able to go out and kind of show that. But he's somebody that is a very good at attention to detail and getting better. He's somebody that head coach Mike Stuthers and before him Mark Morris with the Manchester Monarchs had spoken about his practice detail, and that had been excellent. But as a Calder Cup MVP, he obviously has something that can help out an NHL team right now. He's done basically everything that had been asked him to do and could be expected of him at the American Hockey League level. It's just, turning that into National Hockey League points, because he's the type of a player that if he's not getting points, if he's not using his skill to a team's benefit, then there are other people who can play a similar type of a role. I shouldn't say a similar type of a role, but in the type of a slot that you might use him in, third line center, maybe even a little bit deeper than that, who can provide other assets too. So, he's a shifty playmaking center, very good on-ice vision. He just doesn't have that kind of same level of, obviously not, the Johnny Goudreau type skill or that type of, how would I describe Brendan Gallagher, just that feistiness, that kind of, not allowing to be denied type of going to the net, scoring goals that other players of his size kind of have. But it's still up to him to go out there and show that he has something that can help out this Philadelphia Flyers team. It'll have an opportunity with a team that might not have the same type of system and needs that size down the center of the ice.
John, are you surprised that, back to LeCavalier and Shen for a second, are you surprised in a game that seems to be getting faster and teams trying to pick up the speed that the Kings, who aren't the fastest team, go out and acquire two slow skaters?
I'm not sure about that. I think the Kings are still trying to stick to their bread and butter type game. And that's not to say that the Kings aren't a fast team, because when they're playing well and when the Kings are on their game, they're very good at moving the puck up the ice. This is a Kings team that its possession game is built on the ability of the defenseman to get that puck into the hands of the forwards as quickly as possible and transition fast and be able to use that to build up an offensive zone type advantage over its opponent. I'm not sure. I think I look back at the other, maybe centers that the Kings have had centering a fourth line before, and there hasn't been any excess type speed. There are no like Darren Helms that are there on that type of fourth line for this Kings team. I think they do a you know, a pretty good job still, and I can't really speak to Vincent LeCavalier because we just haven't, you know, no one's really seen a ton of him over the last, you know, however many 12 months or so. But, you know, I don't think this is a type of a move that will have any drastic effect on the team's speed. And keep in mind that Luke Shen, too, you know, the type of role that he was kind of filling in for now is Matt Green. And Matt Green is not one of the elite skaters or fast skaters, you know, in the National Hockey League, too. So the types of players that they're going in for weren't exactly burners. But, you know, it is interesting. I thought it was a little bit overblown at the start of the season where, you know, the Kings start out 0-3 and teams are talking about, oh, it's just a new NHL where it's going to be speed and skill. And you look at the Tampa Bay Lightning and Chicago Blackhawks, that's what teams are going to emulate. Teams are going to emulate basically any teams that are going to be successful in the National Hockey League. You know, and there are certain teams. You saw the Toronto Maple Leafs who have had some pretty good success recently under Mike Babcock, you know, in turning, you know, their season around during a massive rebuild right now. That's a team that plays somewhat similar to this LA Kings team, too. That's a very tight checking team that doesn't give you much space on the ice. And that is looking to eventually, you know, find its success and find its niche as a possession team that works in the offensive zone. So I think that's a good question. I'm not sure, but, you know, I don't think it drastically affects what the Kings are looking to do. And that's, again, get that puck up the ice quickly, get the pucks into the hands of the forwards and operate with that advantage in zone time.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is John Rosen. He's the Los Angeles Kings insider. John, the way things currently look, and barring something unforeseen, it looks like the Kings are going to be the runaway winner of the Pacific Division. Unfortunately for the Kings, their you know, reward for winning the Pacific Division is a first-round playoff matchup against a pretty good Central Division team that would be in the second wild card spot. Do you expect that this is a rule that will eventually get changed? And is there any sort of chatter in the Kings organization about, you know, how, you know, quote unquote unfair it might be that that's their reward for finishing so well?
I'm sure that's something that's being privately discussed. I think we're still a little bit too early for that, really, to, you know, the Kings to start thinking about where they are, who they're going to face, who their who their first round opponent might be. But yeah. I mean, there's no shortage of willingness to change league rules. League rules seemingly change virtually every single year. You know, I don't see a ton of continuity in you know, particular rules sticking with them. I mean, I'm just speaking very kind of, I guess, flighty and, you know, off the cuff here. But, you know, that there's always that willingness when something goes wrong is to immediately step in and adjust that now. I like this current system. I like the idea of having more in-division rivalry-type games in the playoffs. But again, all it's going to take is a team, you know, in the first round that, you know, loses a very tough playoff series where that's going to make some general manager upset and things will be changed after that. Just keep in mind, every single year there are excellent teams that lose in the first round of the playoffs. And the Kings' opponent tonight, the St. Louis Blues, have been on the, you know, the understanding end of that a couple of times as well. You know, the San Jose Sharks from a couple of years ago, an excellent team too. So, you know, it's something that, you know, it's probably in the back of the team's mind right now, but I think they're just, you know, getting to the halfway point right now. I don't think that there's that firm evaluation of where they are, where they stand, and what the postseason might look like.
John, we asked you about Andrei Kopitar and his pending UFA status and his potential new contract last time, but everybody who's listening is going to want to know about that, so we'd be remiss if we didn't ask you about it. But is there any update on Andrei Kopitar and his contract negotiations with LA?
Yeah, no signing or announcement is imminent right now. I think a lot of us who cover the team, you know, kind of as beat reporters, probably if we were to lay some chips on the table, would expect it to happen at some point this month. It's been close. I think it's been close for a while, but it's just not finished right now at this point. Some of the speculation from the outside has been just over the presence maybe of a no movement or a no trade clause, and the Kings aren't not a team that hands those out. I believe the only player right now with one that has been handed out by the team has been Dustin Brown, and I can't even speak to the you know, the type of a clause that he has in his contract, because I think it's the exact nature of it is widely known right now at this point. But it's going to happen. There is 100% willingness on both ends. Andrei Kopitar wants to play his entire career at Los Angeles. From everything we've understood, there have been the constant communications, and there has been significant movement from where they were at from where they were like 3 months ago right now. So it will eventually happen, and then when you see that, you're going to start seeing the Kings open up negotiations with Milan Lucic. Braden McNabb is also somebody that's due to become a restricted free agent. He's really seen his game grow, so they're going to have to set a little bit of funds aside for him as well. But should the Kings want to re-sign both Kopitar and Lucic, and every single indication I've heard right now is that that is something that's going to happen, is that Lucic will come after Kopitar, should this get done relatively soon, then the Kings probably, from what I have heard within the organization, would have to move an asset, and that would be something that would probably happen over the summer, not during the season, just because they have so many funds and so many large contracts to a lot of key players. And that's something that happens, you know, when a team finds the success that the Kings have had, having won the Cup a couple times in the last 4 years. So, you know, that'll be an interesting offseason coming up for the Kings. But absolutely, going into the 50th season next year for this LA Kings team, Andre Kopitar will be a centerpiece of that that Kings team heading forward.
John Rosen covers the Los Angeles Kings. He's the LA Kings insider on Twitter. John, appreciate your time this morning and enjoy tonight's Kings Blues game. Thanks very much for joining us.
Great stuff and my pleasure. Thank you, guys.
Take care, John. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll provide a quick update from Winnipeg Jets practice. Not altogether good news for Winnipeg Jets fans. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Promise me you'll never do that again.
Yeah, please.
Just
God.
Never do that again. One final segment this Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The segment's brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich, conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall. Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
I think you're going to need an Illegal Curve sandwich and some borscht. Definitely some soup, because how cold it is outside. I mean, you gotta keep your body warm.
It's true. It is quite chilly. I had an Illegal Curve sandwich for lunch yesterday. It was quite delightful, I assure you.
Did you chew it or did you just swallow it like a duck?
I just swallowed it whole like a duck. Update from Winnipeg Jets practice. We do not know any more detail than the following. No Mark Scheifele on the ice. No Alex Burmistrov on the ice for the Winnipeg Jets. Adam Pardy in a white forwards sweater. So we do not know anything more than that. If we hear about it in the last 10 minutes of the broadcast, we will provide it to you, but we do not know yet their status for tomorrow afternoon. But as soon as we know, we will let you know, either on the air via our Twitter at Illegal Curve or on illegalcurve.com.
Well, Drew, we also obviously hope that Scheifele and Burmistrov are in the lineup tomorrow, but that could mean that the Pardy dangle is coming back tomorrow afternoon at MTS Center.
Former Sabre.
Yeah, exactly. Adam Pardy's revenge. It's going to be,
right.
You know, that's the new storyline tomorrow.
Right.
It's no longer about Kane and Bogosian. It's about Adam Pardy's revenge. Let's finish it off with one final segment. It's called Rapid Fire.
Rapid Fire.
The week of trades in the NHL continues as Emerson Eaton was traded from the
New
York
Rangers.
Hold on,
did you say Eaton or Eatem?
Eatem.
You said Eaton, like I'm eating something.
I heard Eaton.
Well, I'm hungry. You know, all the talk about the Illegal Curve sandwich, and before that, the pudding, which was odd, but, you know.
Continue the trade.
Emerson Eatem, better?
Thank you.
Was traded to Vancouver for Nicholas Jensen and a late-round draft pick. Your thoughts on the deal for both sides?
You know, the trade's only interesting because I like Carl Hagelin as a player in Anaheim. Now, I know he's struggled there so far this year. And I thought if the Rangers were going to trade Hagelin, they must have been high on Emerson Eatem, because I wasn't particularly. You know, he's got high skill and he can move. He's actually bigger than you think, but he doesn't bring it every night, and he certainly doesn't go anywhere near contact on a regular basis. So I kind of see him as being that offensive producer at the AHL level with some skill that will tease you in the NHL level, but nothing high end. So I'm surprised that the Rangers were so quick to turn him around, only because I was surprised that they acquired him in the first place. Nicholas Jensen, only seen play on one occasion, has some skill. Clearly Vancouver didn't like where he was developing, so they're kind of hoping a change of scenery works for these players. I think the odds would be that it would work for neither of them. in terms of the potential that, that both teams had for them, Anaheim and Vancouver, when respectively when they drafted them in the high rounds of the NHL entry draft.
Yeah, and we should mention Emerson Edom actually played for Willie Desjardins for Medicine Hat in the WHL, so I think that had a factor.
Sure, good point, Izzy. I didn't know that.
Yeah, and so I agree, though. Emerson Edom scored a beautiful goal against the Winnipeg Jets in the playoffs this past April. But I agree with Rich. I mean, he's been in and out of the lineup. He hasn't been good enough to crack the Rangers lineup.
Well, remember, he was not remember, so I should point out that he was available in Anaheim for quite some time before they traded him to New York.
Yep, and so I think this is a trade where Vancouver needs a little bit more depth. He'll probably have a better opportunity to stick in the lineup on the third or fourth line on Vancouver.
But the Rangers' third and fourth lines aren't what they used to be, Izzy.
No, they're not, and you know that's one of the reasons why I was a little bit surprised. He only played 18 games, I believe it was, with the Rangers. But as Rich mentioned, he's not the most physical player. He's a scorer, and he needs to score. That's what he did in the WHL. That's why he was a first-round pick. So I think it's an opportunity. Jensen, around the same age as Edom, I believe just 1 year younger. So it's an opportunity for both those guys to kind of have a fresh start and maybe get their careers going again. Jensen has only had a cup of tea with the Vancouver Canucks. He's only played 24 games in the NHL, so maybe he you know, catches fire with the Rangers.
And just so you know, both have flashes of skill. Okay, you need to know that. And both guys, you know, can give you something, and you're thinking to yourself, okay, they're actually, you know, pretty talented. But there's a lot of nights where you're wondering where they are.
Paul Friesen from JetSkate, here's the lines right now. The first line is unchanged so far for tomorrow night's game, tomorrow afternoon's games. The second line is now Perreault, Ehlers, and Thorburn, Lowry, Ladd, and Armia, and Kopp, Peluso, and Party. So that's right now how they're lining up.
Well, that's what we talked about all year, is that if the team has been very lucky to avoid injuries because they have no depth, and that would be the display. That would be an exact example of the lack of depth at those lines.
And I wouldn't put too much stock into those lines, Rich,
because
Burmistrov and Scheifele are healthy, then, I mean, two of those players are coming out, right? So
those lines are a mess, though, if they're not healthy.
Yeah. Continuing with rapid fire, the Anaheim Ducks acquired goaltender Dustin Tokarski from the Montreal Canadiens earlier this week in exchange for Max Freiberg. That gives the Ducks four goaltenders with NHL experience, as they also have Anton Khudobin in the AHL. And, of course, Frederik Andersen is now the backup to John Gibson. Do you expect the Ducks are going to be trading away one of their four goaltenders with NHL experience?
Well, maybe, but I just don't understand why Andersen's so on his way out. Like, you look at Khudobin and you look at Tokarski, Drew, and as you're looking at two guys who are just small in this day and age in the net, 6 feet and 5'11". Khudobin's 5'11", and Tokarski's 6 feet. There's tough to be in the NHL when you're not very big. You see, like, a really smaller guy like Jonas Enroth. You just can't cover the whole net. In this day and age, they're all 6'2", 6'3". And some of the great ones are small, but their reflexes are exceptional, and they're just very, very skilled. So I'm not sure if this has any effect at all, really. And if it does, in terms of trading Andersen, I would be interested in him if I was a team, because he certainly has potential.
Yeah, you'd probably think that the Ducks are going to move another goaltender, Drew. It's unfortunate for Dustin Tokarski, a good Saskatchewan boy. He came into the playoffs with Montreal a couple of years ago and did pretty well, and he's fallen out of favor.
Well, you had opportunity this year to make hay if you wanted to.
Right, and that's a good make hay, Saskatchewan. I like that. And Mike Condon's obviously had the number one role as Carey Price returns from injury or recovers from his injury. So, you know, maybe there's an opportunity for him to be the backup there, but they definitely have a lot of goaltenders there in Anaheim right now.
Nikolai Ehlers, along with Bobby Farnham, were fined for diving earlier in this week. We'll talk about Ehlers for the Winnipeg Jets, of course. Was that warranted? Do you think he deserved a fine for diving throughout the course of the season?
What about the fact that Bobby Farnham's come out of nowhere and he's got six goals for the Devils? I think that's more impressive. You know, I got to be honest. I didn't think either was that bad. And I realized that Nikolai Ehlers was warned, apparently, during the game for embellishment, but I'm not a big fan of, $2,000? I mean, what? That's a slap on the wrist, so I don't take these diving embellishment fines that seriously.
I like it in the sense that you do. The money's not a factor, is it? It's the embarrassment. Yeah.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And cheers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stink like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Izzy, I'll start with you.
It's got to go to Iggy. Scored his 600th career goal earlier this week. He's a class act. He's a future Hall of Famer. Have been a huge fan of his since he was drafted by the Dallas Stars and then subsequently traded to Calgary for Joe Nieuwendyk, who we talked about earlier. So Iggy, 600 goals. He's going to get a lot more here. You know, he's a beauty.
Richie.
Finished the book Quinn by Dan Robson, The Life of a Hockey Legend. Unreal book. Highly recommend it. Just tremendous look into Pat Quinn's life, and you can't help but love the guy after you read the book if you didn't like him before. Tremendous read.
Available at booksellers everywhere, presumably.
I would assume they would be selling a book.
That's it for this Saturday morning in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. A big thank you to our guest, Bill Hoppe of the Times-Herald newspaper, former Winnipeg Jets coach Claude Noel. And if you missed any of that, we'll have it available on illegalcurve.com for you to download. Also, big thank you to John Rosen, the LA Kings insider, and Chuck Gormley of CSNMidAtlantic.com. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, the Riverview Health Center Foundation's Cycle on Life, and to Keener Jerseys. Big thanks to producer Rory for doing the great job behind the board. For my colleagues, Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Thanks for listening. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
As long as we sit together as a team, we'll be all right.